countries like Iran as an example of honesty and true cooperation with Afghans. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Britain is witnessing long queues outside fuel stations, including the capital London, following fuel rationing at some distribution centers and temporary closure of many retail stations. British Petroleum said it has closed more than 1,000 of its fuel distribution stations, citing a lack of both unleaded and diesel grades. The multinational gas and oil company blamed the closure on a shortage of truck drivers. The government has cautioned against panic buying, saying there is no shortage at refineries. Britons have, however, paid little heed to the pledge, as long queues of motorists have been forming outside filling stations since Saturday morning. Retailers have warned that the clock is ticking for the government and that it only had just days to prevent a significant disruption in festive preparations in the run-up to Christmas, which is only 3 months away. The administration of Prime Minister Boris Johnson says it is looking at temporary measures to address the issue. British media said the government is mulling allowing some 5,000 truckers into Britain on short-term work visas in a bid to alleviate the acute labor shortage. The UK's Road Haulage Association, however, says Britain needs 100,000 drivers to meet the demand. The UK opposition leader has blasted the government for what he called letting the people down amid the fuel crisis.
We're obviously at a crucial time for the country, and this government is letting people down so badly, whether it's hammering working people on tax and universal credit, whether it's shortages of food and fuel. I've just been up the road, three petrol stations, one of them with a massive queue and two of them with no fuel.
The driver shortage is partly blamed on Britain's withdrawal from the European Union, which has resulted in tens of thousands of truckers from EU member states leaving the UK. But it has been exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic. The shortage has also set Britain on path for food chaos, since it has led to disruption in deliveries to supermarkets and fast food chains. The fuel issue comes as Britain is also facing a record high surge in natural gas prices, with wholesale prices being up to 250% since January. Experts say households will get hit by surging power bills this coming winter, while small energy firms are at risk of collapsing. Supermarkets and food firms say the price rise has caused a shortage of carbon dioxide, which is threatening UK supplies of meat and fresh produce.
The United States border with Mexico has witnessed an influx of asylum seekers in recent weeks, with thousands, mostly Haitians, massing there after fleeing poverty in their home country. The migrants reached the Rio Grande after a long, treacherous journey. Images showed people with toddlers staying in squalid tents under a bridge in the Texan border town of Del Rio. But as usual, U.S. authorities began removing and expelling and, in some cases, cracking down on refugees despite criticism at home and abroad. On Thursday, U.S. Special Envoy to Haiti, Daniel Foote, resigned in a fiery letter over what he called inhumane expulsions of asylum seekers. The United Nations also demanded an end to the mass expulsion, with UN Refugee Chief calling it inconsistent with international norms. The United Nations Human Rights Office particularly expressed concern over the ill treatment of migrants at the southern U.S. border.
Like we are disturbed by the images we've seen and by the fact that we've seen all these migrants and refugees and asylum seekers being transported to Port-au-Prince. We are seriously concerned by the fact that it appears that there has not been any individual assessment on the case.
Condemnations poured in after images showing predominantly white federal agents on horseback whipping and chasing migrants went viral on social media. Human rights groups say such incidents are reminiscent of the disturbing U.S. history of racial and ethnic violence.
The United States has been in existence. It has exploited African people, no matter where African people have been dispersed around the world by Europeans.
The Mexican president, whose country has been the main transit for U.S.-bound migrants, called on his American counterpart to deal with the root cause of the migrant problem. Andres Manuel López Obrador urged the U.S. to invest in the countries from where migration originates. As the U.S. continues to grapple with the influx of migrants, it remains to be seen whether the Biden administration prevents the crisis on its southern border in a humane way or continues breaking its promises to welcome migrants into the country.
Nerves are growing more frayed in the EU ahead of wintertime. Gas prices have soared by 250% since the start of the year, and supplies are depleting. Almost half of all gas used in the EU is imported from Russia, but relations between the bloc and Moscow are at an all-time low. Analysts say it's not surprising, therefore, that the Kremlin is reluctant to increase supplies. The crisis has been discussed at a meeting of EU energy ministers attended by senior European Commission officials.
We have to end our dependence on foreign, volatile fossil fuels as soon as possible. We also need to take energy efficiency seriously.
Experts say ordinary, hard-pressed citizens are now paying the price because the EU refuses to dial down its anti-Russia rhetoric.
It's not possible to expect that European Union will export its rules, its behavior, all its values to everybody in this neighborhood. But it seems to me that the feeling here sometimes in the political bodies of the European Union is the following. If others are not taking the internal rules of the European Union, that does mean that they are wrong, that they are incorrect.
Gas prices have shot up due to demand because economies are bouncing back from the pandemic. In the EU, last winter and spring were colder than usual, and so gas reserves in the 27-nation bloc were hit. Since then, power grids have not benefited much from wind energy due to mild weather conditions. Moscow and Berlin want the speedy approval of Nord Stream 2, the controversial pipeline under the Baltic Sea that will double Russian gas exports to Germany. Completed earlier this month, the pipeline cannot start delivering gas until it clears regulatory hurdles here in the European Commission. The United States is very much against the Russian-German gas pipeline, and analysts say Washington is putting the EU under pressure to try and delay things. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Millions of energy customers face spiraling price hikes as several smaller firms in the market have collapsed in a matter of days. Avro Energy and Green ceased trading on Wednesday, with existing customers now face being put onto expensive new tariffs, with the energy regulator warning there could be more bad news ahead.
Not unusual for suppliers to go out of the market. I think what's different this time is that dramatic change in the costs that those suppliers are facing. So we've had around sort of, you know, we've had five roughly over the past few months. We've had a number more at the start of the year.
Business Minister Kwasi Kwarteng has already said there will be no bailout for the majority of energy firms, but the government will instead focus on the plight of the customer.
The government has been clear that protecting consumers is our primary focus and shapes our entire approach to this issue. We will continue to protect consumers with the energy price cap.
On the streets of the British capital, there were fears of what a price hike would mean, but also calls for accountability.
It's unacceptable. Everything is going high, even the price of food and everything is going high. Even the public transport, everything is going high. So the government, they should do something about that.
Are you worried that your bills might increase this winter?
Yes, I am. I'm a pensioner. I'm very worried about it.
At some point, there has to be a reason as to why this has happened, whether it could have been foreseen, whether things could have been done to prevent it. The people who run the energy companies, how much money have they made? How much money have they taken off and shipped offshore? That should be looked at.
The British consumer has had a tough couple of months. First of all, dealing with the uncertainty around Brexit, the fallout from the COVID crisis, and now the prospect of spiraling energy costs.
Once more, it will be the most vulnerable who may yet again bear the brunt of any drastic price hikes this winter, with some households having to choose between heating and eating. Amina Taylor, London.
Former Catalan regional leader Carles Puigdemont must stay in Sardinia, Sassari judge ruled on Friday. The politician had been arrested by the Italian police upon his arrival to the Sardinian town of Alghero on Thursday night. Puigdemont had reportedly travelled there to attend a conference, but he was put in custody as soon as he stepped onto Italian soil. He was detained under an international arrest warrant issued by Spain over his alleged involvement in the unilateral independence referendum and the subsequent unilateral declaration of independence of Catalonia 4 years ago. Puigdemont is now a member of the European Parliament living in Belgium. Tens of supporters of the politician demonstrated outside the Sassari court calling for his release.
Later on Friday, former Catalonia president Puigdemont was released by a local court, but the politician will have to remain in Sardinia until questions such the validity of the European arrest warrant against him and his immunity status are resolved. Should the arrest be considered valid, the same court will have to decide whether to hand him over to Spanish authorities.
Italy's justice ministry on its side has made clear it had played no role in the case, which, quote, was the sole preserve of the judges involved. Max Civili, Rome.
Islamic and national factions in the Gaza Strip held a protest in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails who are under hunger strike and are subjected to Israeli abuse. The event that included Friday prayer in front of the Red Cross headquarters came a day after an ex-prisoner, Hussein Masalma, died of cancer after being detained for 19 years.
We are here in front of the Red Cross to remind the international human rights organizations of their role to protect our prisoners inside Israeli jails and who are under solitary confinement. There are six prisoners under hunger strike protesting the inhumane Israeli abuse against them and the illegal administrative detention. This is not the only medical negligence of hundreds of our prisoners, but an international killing practiced by the Israeli regime.
Al-Masalma's medical condition deteriorated due to complications resulting from Israeli medical negligence and torture at the time he was in custody that led to his inevitable slow death.
There is no doubt that Palestinian detainees are witnessing tough measures and abuse inside the Israeli jails, especially following the escape operation. Yesterday, Al-Masalma succumbed to his cancer that deteriorated while being in jail. There are more than hundreds of inmates who have lost their lives in Israeli jails due to intentional medical negligence.
Palestinian factions say they won't sit idle while Israeli violations against the prisoners are increasing, urging the international community to take serious action to save the prisoner's life.
We are holding Friday prayer here in front of the Red Cross to express our support to our prisoners who are a symbol of our Palestinian cause. We will always be proud of their patience. Our message to the Israeli regime is clear. We hold Israel responsible for the lives of our prisoners and we won't remain silent over these violations.
Palestinian detainees are passing through hard medical conditions as 15 inmates inside Israeli jails are diagnosed with cancer, while more than 200 others have lost their lives as a result of the Israeli systematic policy of medical negligence.
While hundreds of Palestinian detainees, including women and children, are subjected to inhumane violations of their rights inside Israeli jails, Palestinians here are paying efforts demanding the international community to break its silence over the prisoners' issue. Roba Shabet, Gaza.
For the past 20 years now, the European Union has been pumping billions of euro into Ukraine. The master plan, according to analysts, is to create a big ally right next to Russia. The problem is Ukraine is still corrupt to the core, according to a new report from the EU's financial watchdog, the European Court of Auditors, or ECA. We spoke online to one of the authors.
The Commission should rethink the strategy, more focused on the root causes of this corruption, and we say the grand corruption.
Since 2014 alone, EU taxpayers have sent 12.5 billion euro to Kiev via the European Commission. Corruption reform efforts funded by the EU have failed, the European Court of Auditors report finds. Critics say the EU uses Ukraine as a pawn to provoke Russia. On the issue of energy alone, it appears Moscow would be of greater benefit to the EU.
When you look at this scathing report, does it make you think that perhaps you've picked the wrong side in all of this?
It is not vis-a-vis one or the other country that Ukraine is a strategic partner. Ukraine is an important country in its own right.
The European Court of Auditors report states the EU has long been aware of the connection between oligarchs, high-level officials, politicians, the judiciary, and state-owned enterprises. However, the 27-nation bloc has failed to tackle this with its cash injections. Experts say gangsters are running Ukraine.
We see that they have their people and their ideas, which is much more serious, all over the place, in the parliament, in the government.
The EU's executive arm insists progress has been made in the fight against corruption in the country, despite what the ECA report says. The European Commission's defence of Ukraine simply could not have been more robust. There's little to no doubt taxpayers will view that as scandalous. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
South Korea announced a daily record 2,434 cases of COVID-19 for the period ending Thursday at midnight, as the country struggles to rein in a fourth wave of the pandemic. The increase in cases, together with a vaccine supply shortage hampering immunization schedules, has generated public concern.
I was told that getting vaccinated, there should be 2 to 4 weeks between the first and second doses. I'm stressed out about vaccines because I have seen many people, including my family members, getting their second shot 6 to 8 weeks later.
South Korea was somewhat slow to reserve vaccine supplies, with roughly 42% of the population now fully vaccinated. Several wealthy countries, such as the U.S. and U.K., have provided vaccines to all who wanted them, and are now offering booster shots.
In South Korea, you cannot get vaccinated whenever you want because there has been a lack of vaccines, especially at first. On the other hand, in other countries like North Korea and very poor countries, they don't have any vaccines. I think it's unfair globally.
South Korea in August earmarked $2 billion to make the country a vaccine production hub, to in future secure enough vaccines domestically and assist in creating an adequate global supply. South Korean officials had eased restrictions for Chuseok, the Thanksgiving holiday, which wrapped up earlier this week, in order to provide some relief from the previous stricter social distancing measures. But authorities here again Friday tightened restrictions in order to try to bring the current fourth wave surge under control. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan says he has worked with all previous three American presidents, but does not seem to have a good start with the current one. Erdogan's comments came right after his arrival to Turkey from the U.S. Erdogan noted that Ankara will not step back from its deal with Russia for the purchase of S-400 surface-to-air missiles, which had already created tension between Turkey and the U.S.
We have not experienced such a situation with previous U.S. leaders. When it comes to fighting terrorist organizations, the U.S. gives them loads of equipment. My wish is to have friendly and not hostile relations with the United States, but the way things are going between two NATO allies is currently not too auspicious.
Erdogan also criticized U.S. failure in Afghanistan, adding that Washington cannot expect Turkey to pay the price of its irresponsible behavior there. He added that the U.S. cannot expect Turkey to receive Afghan refugees and open its door to them.
The problem between Turkey and the United States continues, and their relations have been strained lately due to several issues, including Afghanistan and Syria and other regional disagreements. Even before U.S. presidential elections, Biden showed a negative attitude towards Turkey and the Turkish government. As two NATO allies, those differences must be resolved. However, the U.S. is aiding militants whom Turkey sees as a threat to its national security. Endangering the security and stability of another NATO ally is supposed to be against NATO principles. I think we are going to witness more tension in the coming days.
Turkey-U.S. relations have been at loggerheads due to U.S. continuous support to YPG Kurdish militants in northern Syria. Washington is accused of providing Kurdish militants affiliated with Kurdistan Workers' Party with weapons and training. The Turkish president was hoping to solve disagreements between his government and the Biden administration in his visit to the U.S., but it seems things got more complicated than before. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends, no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging. And to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless Thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless Thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless Thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is His anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is His good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from Thee, O patron of beneficence.
This one lay. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, when more and more Palestinians are being killed by the regime in Tel Aviv, a conference was held in Erbil, Iraq, to normalize relations with Israel has been condemned by Baghdad. Arrest warrants have been issued for some of the participants as Iraq is taking this attempt to normalize ties with Israel very seriously. Stay with us as we take a look at this on this Spotlight.
A conference held Friday in Erbil, the capital of the semi-autonomous Iraq's Kurdistan region, has caused controversy as it backed normalization of ties with Israel. The gathering was hosted by a U.S. think tank and drew widespread condemnation in the wake of Israeli atrocities against the Palestinian people. The Kurdistan regional government called the conference unauthorized, saying it did not reflect the views and policies of regional officials. The Iraqi authorities strongly condemned the meeting, with President Barham Saleh reiterating support for the Palestinian cause.
The Iraqi presidency strongly rejects normalization of relations with Israel and calls for respect for the will of the Iraqi people and their national and independent decision.
The Iraqi premier adopted a similar stance.
The concept of normalization is constitutionally, legally, and politically rejected in the Iraqi state.
Other political leaders and military officials, as well as religious figures, including influential cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, came down hard on Erbil for holding the event.
Erbil must prevent such terrorist Zionist gatherings. Otherwise, the Iraqi government must treat all the participants of such conferences as criminals and arrest them. If Erbil does not prevent such meetings, we will take actions that we are religiously, intellectually, and nationally responsible for.
Participants in the Erbil conference demanded Iraq join a U.S.-sponsored process that has so far seen the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, and Sudan normalize ties with Israel. The normalization deals, clinched last year, have been strongly condemned by Palestinian officials. They say the deals are a stab in the back of Palestinians. People in Muslim countries have also protested against normalization with Israel on various occasions. Anti-Israeli sentiments have in recent months grown in Muslim nations as Israel has intensified its atrocities against Palestinians, both in the occupied territories and the besieged Gaza Strip. Now, any attempt to normalize relations with Israel is seen as a complete ignorance of all those atrocities against the people deprived of their basic right to live on their own land just because of the regime's push for its land grab policy.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the Spotlight, Dr. Kevin Baird, author and Middle East expert out of Madison, Wisconsin, and Mick Napier, Scottish Palestinian from the Palestine Solidarity Campaign out of Edinburgh.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off with Kevin. I mean, why do you think that this conference was held at this time in Erbil to begin? Was it just testing the waters, or was it actually trying to send a message to Baghdad?
Well, it's definitely a message. Let's face it, one of the major reasons, if not the major reason, for the genocidal U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq was to try to take out Iraq as an impediment to endless Zionist settler colonial expansion. And the occupation of Iraq continues as long as this kind of thing goes on. And, of course, the war on Iraq was conceived much earlier. It's largely the product of the 1996 Clean Break document, which was a neoconservative document commissioned by Netanyahu that saw that the best way to try to ensure the Zionist regime's ability to continue expanding and dominating the region would be to basically bring the U.S. in and break up the regional countries into pieces. And that is in line with the Oded Yanon plan, an earlier Israeli long-term plan that involved breaking up Syria and Iraq and other regional countries into ethnic and sectarian enclaves. Now, Iraqi Kurdistan was high on the list of regions destined for this Zionist sledgehammer and breakup because, of course, there is this factor of Kurdish nationalism. And although many Kurds are patriotic and sympathize with the Palestinians, there is unfortunately a corrupt minority of wealthy and influential Kurds in various countries who have played ball with the Zionists. And so the U.S. occupation did intentionally set up this quasi-autonomous region of Kurdistan, and the Zionists have been all in, stealing oil, stealing resources, bribing leaders, and trying to break off Kurdistan from Iraq so that they can turn that into another occupied zone. Okay. And that's what this is really about. The Americans and the Zionists are continuing to occupy and try to break up Iraq and take it out of the equation as an impediment to Zionist genocide of Palestine.
Well, Mick, in general, does this conference show how much the Israeli regime has infiltrated or trying to infiltrate Iraq's Kurdistan area? And overall, how dangerous is this? Because Kevin talked about the goal of trying to basically separate that region from the whole, which was a Washington and Tel Aviv plan to begin with. But your take overall?
Well, one of the fundamental problems for the Zionist project, even with its huge military advantages, is that you still have 6 or 7 million Zionist Jews surrounded by hundreds of millions of Arabs, who, when they switch on their TV, can see Arabs being killed, Palestinian Arabs being killed, because they're Arabs. And the project cannot rely on military advantage alone. It has always had a parallel goal of weakening Arab nations. And the Israelis have never been slow to fish in troubled waters. For example, in South Sudan, they backed, they aligned themselves with some of the rebels against the regime in Khartoum. In Lebanon, we saw that during invasions and afterwards, they did for a period find client groups. Some groups of Christians, of course, aligned with the nationalist movement, but other groups for a period aligned with Israel. And now in Iraq, of course, we see them fishing in troubled waters, trying to align elements of Kurdish nationalism with the Zionist project. They need to weaken every Arab regime without exception in order for the Zionist project to survive. And that comes up against a problem, of course, because you can't simply be neutral. There is a dynamic to this. When the Saudis began to move towards Israel, worked out deals under the table. It's not yet completely reached the stage of an exchange of ambassadors, but in order to prove their goodwill to Washington and also to Tel Aviv, the Saudis arrested, they kidnapped scores and scores of Palestinians off the street. 69 was a number I heard of Saudi arrests in order to show goodwill towards Israel and to the USA. So it's not possible to be neutral here. There is a dynamic at play. And in order to align with Israel, you have to move decisively against the Palestinian nation. The great mass of ordinary Arabs understand this, and that's why they're deeply suspicious of normalization. It's a danger to every Arab country. It's not just a danger to Al-Quds, where the Israeli appetite is undiminished to take it over, also the whole of Jerusalem. But Zionism is a dynamic movement, and Netanyahu and now Bennett, even while he tries to win allies in the Gulf and with Morocco and Egypt and so on, he still has to satisfy his own base by continuing the dispossession of Palestinians, the shooting, the executions, the house demolitions and so on. Mm-hmm. The great mass of Arabs have access to that information. So okay. Any normalization is bound to be unstable.
Well, Kevin, I mean, as the Israeli regime continues to get more brutal against Palestinians, I mean, shouldn't it be an insult for any Muslims to even consider normalizing ties with Israel? And we're looking at, because we're talking about other countries, the Arab countries that have normalized ties. I mean, do you think that there's going to be absolute blowback on these countries? We see that the Iraqi central government now has actually come down hard on the participants of this conference to make a point. But overall, what's your evaluation of this?
Well, yes, the people responsible for this so-called normalization push are absolute traitors, and they are going to be treated as such. And it's really unfortunate. The people of the region are just as strongly opposed to Zionism and as firm in their support for the Palestinian liberation struggle as ever. But the wealthy elites have sold out in some cases. In Morocco, where I've spent considerable time, there have been huge demonstrations against this normalization, which was, of course, seen as a cynical ploy to get Morocco's ability to call the Sahara a part of Morocco, which actually I think is correct. But they needed the United States to rubber stamp that. So they cynically went through with this so-called normalization, which nobody in Morocco supports. Not even the traitors who created that deal supported in Morocco. The country of Morocco is essentially 100% behind the Palestinian liberation struggle and against normalization. But they went along with this because they saw these advantages in having the U.S. give them Western Sahara.
But what's the danger of that, Kevin? I'm sorry to jump in here. You just said, but they went along with it. I want to talk about the danger with that. I mean, shouldn't then that we see, for example, you said 100% the Moroccan people are against it, more and more blowback against these governments who've actually acquiesced to the Zionists, whether we're talking about the UAE or we're talking about Sudan or whichever one.
Absolutely. And again, there have been huge demonstrations in Morocco against this, it hasn't turned into a revolution precisely because the people of Morocco do support their country's sovereignty over Sahara. In other countries, there are these regional and national dynamics that will be different in each place. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, the people who push through this normalization are going to have to answer for it one way or another, because it is a complete betrayal of everything that their people want and stand for. It's a betrayal of the Palestinian cause. It's a betrayal of human rights and human decency. And it's done cynically in search of various kinds of objectives, whether it's money and power, in better relations with the United States. And it's being done at the wrong time in history, because right now the U.S. empire just got bloodied in the graveyard of empires in Afghanistan, and it's now heading home. And it won't be long before this whole five-century era of European hegemony and colonialism and imperialism is over, and at that point, the Zionist entity is gone, kaput. And people are going to remember who were the traitors who, at the point when the Palestinian people were starting to sense that their liberation was close, these traitors sold them out for a very small bill of goods. So, blowback is coming, and it will get there sooner in some places and later in others.
Well, Mick, do you think it's ironic that such a conference would even be held in Erbil? Because, I mean, on the one hand, we've talked about how, yes, there have been efforts to try to encourage the separation of Kurdistan by Washington and others, but it also was Kurdistan which was begging for help when Daesh was closing in on them, and it was Iran's Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani who actually led rescue efforts to help the Kurds and to help defeat Daesh. I mean, there seems to be a lack of understanding of who's the oppressor and who's the oppressed. I mean, your take on that?
Yes, I think the fundamental issue is that normalization between these Arab regimes and between the attempt by elements in the Kurdish area of northern Iraq, it's unconditional. There isn't even an attempt to wrest concessions from the Zionist project, even to slow down the settlement building. I mean, for God's sake, George W. Bush Sr., for a period of time on behalf of the USA, tried to rein in the Israeli settlement building and held back aid for a period of time. The normalization governments in the Middle East at the moment make the approach to Israel completely unconditional. They don't ask for anything for the Palestinians. There's no attempt to even limit the damage that the Zionists do. And that suggests a weakness, because the Zionist project, as I said earlier, is dynamic. It cannot stop, or it would collapse into civil war. Therefore, they must proceed with the dispossession of the Palestinians. And therefore, that acid will eat away at any normalisation which is agreed. Because, you know, the Qatari-based Arab Centre for Research conducted a poll. I think it was, I can't remember which month, but last year, and it showed 80% of Arabs who were asked were opposed to any normalization, opening up of embassies with Israel. A great majority, I think three quarters, saw the Palestinian issue as an issue for all, as an Arab issue, something that they all had to be involved in, not just because of Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, but for many, many reasons as well. The appetites of the Zionists are not limited to the Jordan River. They have an appetite even beyond that. And the further they extend their influence beyond the borders of Palestine into neighboring states, the greater will be the price, because the for their neighbors, for the Arab masses, because the Zionists have appetites well beyond Palestine. The agony they've visited upon the Palestinian people does not preclude their dream of a Jewish empire in the Middle East, and many elements in the Zionist elites over the decades have expressed that appetite, Moshe Dayan and others.
Well, Kevin, Erbil officials say that permission was not given for this conference to be held there. What do you exactly make of that? Does it mean that Washington and Tel Aviv have that much control over Kurdish area, or your overall assessment of that?
Yes, I think it does mean that. I think that Washington and Tel Aviv have tremendous influence in Kurdistan. Let's call it occupied Kurdistan, or part of occupied Iraq. Iraq is regaining its sovereignty, but it hasn't fully regained its sovereignty in the way that it will when the U.S. has to leave the Green Zone and abandon its gigantic, monstrous occupation embassy in the same way that it abandoned its embassy in Kabul. And unfortunately, that hasn't happened yet, but we're seeing things moving in that direction. But at this point, the U.S. still does have a fair bit of power in occupied Iraq. The U.S. murdered well over a million Iraqis in its invasion and just took over so much of the country and looted it and set up structures to try to retain a certain amount of power. And it's still there, and especially in Kurdistan. So the so-called Kurdish regional authority doesn't really have a lot of power to tell the Zionists and the Americans what to do, because there wouldn't be any Kurdish regional authority in its current form without the Zio-American occupation that followed the illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq. And if the Kurdish people in that part of Iraq want to regain their sovereignty, they're going to have to join together with Baghdad and work it out in such a way as that they'll get a certain amount of control over the basics of their lives, but they're obviously going to have to get on board with the rest of Iraq and the rest of the region in standing against Zionism. They're going to have to expel the Zionists who are looting their minerals and oil even as we speak.
Well, Mick, how important is it that efforts are taken in the Muslim world that will not allow the normalization of ties with Israel to be accepted? I mean, what needs to happen in your perspective?
It's very simple. The stronger the Zionists become, then the more complete will be their occupation of Palestine and the expulsion of the native people, the turning of Al-Aqsa Mosque into a Jewish temple, and so on and so on. Look, in every anti-colonial struggle, there are always significant forces which collaborate. In South Africa, one of the biggest black churches was pro-apartheid, actually. It was not true that the whole population was against apartheid. The great majority were, but there were significant elements that actually gravitated towards apartheid. In Angola and Mozambique, there were very significant client movements which supported the apartheid regime against liberation movements there. But in the Middle East, it's biting even more deeply. It's states which are gravitating towards alliance with the Zionist project. And it's not just happening at the level of states. There is a real danger. Mohammed bin Salman has actually shocked a Zionist audience in New York a couple of years ago with the vitriol that he threw at the Palestinians. Once they've begun to swallow the idea of an alliance with Israel, they have to reject the Palestinians, and they have to feed the poison of hostility towards the Palestinian people into their body politic. It's not enough just to leave everything as it was before and have an alliance with Israel. Once you've slept with the Israelis, then you have to repudiate the Palestinians. And that means in foreign policy, but also domestically, you have to whip up hostility to the Palestinians. You have to sing the Zionist song, for example, as Mohammed bin Salman did, that the Palestinians are ungrateful. The Gulf monarchies have been trying to give them money, humanitarian aid and so on. And what do they get? No gratitude whatsoever from the Palestinians. That's what's being said. That's being printed in the newspapers in these countries. So it's dangerous. The ordinary people, the people who want to resist Zionism, have to organize, find alliances, and it has to take deep roots among the ordinary people in order to be successful.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on The Spotlight. Kevin Barrett, author and Middle East expert out of Madison, Wisconsin. Mick Napier, Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign out of Edinburgh. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thank you so much for joining us. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Barbadian Prime Minister Mia Amor Motley delivered a scathing indictment of the rich and the powerful during her address at the 76th session of the UN General Assembly on Friday, September 24th, condemning the leaders of wealthy countries for refusing to take basic steps to end the coronavirus pandemic, tackle the climate emergency, and usher in a more just society. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jake Johnson, journalist. This article is published under the heading Barbados PM slams rich nations for failing on climate, COVID, and inequality. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please.
Thank you.
Barbadian Prime Minister Mia Amor Motley delivered a scathing indictment of the rich and powerful during her address at the 76th session of the UN General Assembly on Friday, September 24th, condemning the leaders of wealthy countries for refusing to take basic steps to end the coronavirus pandemic, tackle the climate emergency, and usher in a more just society. If I use the speech prepared for me to deliver today, it would be a repetition of what you have heard from others and also from me, Motley said at the outset of her remarks, which came after the leaders of African and Latin American nations decried the massive, persistent inequities in coronavirus vaccine distribution that have left billions of people without access to life-saving shots. She asked, how many more times will we then have a situation where we say the same thing over and over and over to come to naught? My friends, we cannot do that anymore. In the roughly 15 minutes that followed, Motley, the leader of Barbados Labour Party and the first woman to serve as the small island nation's prime minister, decried the international community's continued inaction in the face of intensifying global crises. She said, how many more variants of COVID-19 must arrive? How many more before a worldwide action plan for vaccinations will be implemented? How many more deaths must it take before 1.7 billion excess vaccines in the possession of the advanced countries of the world will be shared with those who have simply no access? Motley added, none are safe until all are safe. How many more times will we hearing the news? How much more global temperature rise must there be before we end the burning of fossil fuels? And how much more must sea levels climb in small island developing states before those who profited from the stockpiling of greenhouse gases contribute to the loss and damage that they occasioned, rather than asking us to crowd out the fiscal space that we have for development to cure the damage caused by the greed of others? Motley went on to dismiss the notion that the international community lacks adequate resources to make transformative progress in the fight against COVID-19, the climate crisis, and global inequality. The Barbadian Prime Minister said, we have the means to give every child on this planet a tablet, and we have the means to give every adult a vaccine, and we have the means to invest in protecting the most vulnerable on our planet from a changing climate, but we choose not to. It is not because we do not have enough. It is because we do not have the will to distribute that which we have. And it is also because, regrettably, the faceless few do not fear the consequences sufficiently. The nation states of this assembly and the people of this world must indicate what direction we want our world to go in, and not leave it to the faceless few who have worked so hard to prevent the prosperity from being shared.
Good morning. morning.
Good morning.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.